and welcome to the AgEcon MT podcast series, part of the AgEconMT.com blog and website, and a production of the Department of Agricultural Economics and Economics at Montana State University. I'm Anton Beckerman, and today we're looking at issues in the futures market with Dr. Mindy Mallory, an associate professor at the University of Illinois. Mindy is in the Agricultural Economics Department at the university, and we're so glad to have you, Mindy. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, where you started, what you're doing now, what your interests are, so on and so forth.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me here at Montana State. I'm excited to come and give the seminar later on today and excited to do my first podcast, so that's pretty good. So I started out growing up on a family farm. My parents grew corn, soybeans, wheat, typical stuff, and they also had a cow-calf operation. So I grew up around it. I grew up kind of understanding the institutions and stuff, but I never really thought about ag economics as a separate thing from economics. And I just had the good fortune to naively choose Iowa State for my PhD. And when I got there, I realized that ag economics was a thing and that I was kind of interested in that. And that's how I landed doing agricultural economics.
And what do you do right now at Illinois? What types of topics are you interested in?
Sure. So a lot of my work is applied price analysis. So a lot of focus on futures markets, forecasting futures markets, particularly corn or soybeans is the primary topic, primary commodity of focus. I also do some work on, have done a lot of work in the past on the impact of ethanol on corn markets, corn prices.
Yeah, and that's certainly been a big issue in the corn markets and spillovers into other markets, as we in wheat country here know for sure. So tell us a little bit about the paper that you're going to be presenting today. You mentioned that your research is looking at futures and price analysis, and this is related to that, right?
Mm-hmm. It is. So it's basically an examination of liquidity cost in the corn futures market.
So what do you mean by liquidity cost?
Sure. So in a futures market, there are traders who post bids to buy, offers to sell at any given time. And those bids and offers are sort of standing orders in the market. And so if you, as a trader, want to buy or sell immediately, you can just submit what's called a market order. And it gets paired with one of those standing orders to buy or sell. And the offers to buy are usually a little bit lower than the offers to sell. And so there's a spread between the bids to buy and the offers to sell. It's called the bid-ask spread.
Why are the bids lower or higher?
Sure. Great question. So if you are in the business of providing liquidity to the market, then your trading strategy is not to guess whether the price is going to go up or down. Your whole business model is to just place standing offers to buy and sell. And so in order for that to be a viable business, you as a liquidity provider would like to purchase bids to buy a little bit lower than offers to sell. And then when you buy and sell, you make a small, you make a very small margin. But the goal is if you do that many times a day, then you can make some kind of business out of that.
And so that's going back to the quote unquote basic rule of economics, buy low, sell high.
Right.
Perfect.
Exactly.
Okay. So you're looking at those spreads.
Yes. Yeah, so those spreads are what are referred to as liquidity costs. And so regular traders like farmers or anyone needing to hedge an actual purchase or sale of a commodity like corn is interested in that liquidity cost because they may want to get in immediately and not place one of those standing orders. The cost to do that, they're going to have to cross the spread, as we say, and pay an extra quarter of a cent to a half of a cent to make that purchase or sale.
And so what are you looking at with respect to those spreads?
Sure. So we estimated what the actual bid-ask spread was. And in addition to that, and this is kind of the innovation of the paper, we explored what was actually driving the spread. And we used a model that breaks the bid-ask spread down into three components. The first component is cost associated with adverse selection. And that's basically the risk to the liquidity provider of trading with an informed trader. So someone who, for some reason or another, understands that the price is going to go up, that's a risk to the liquidity provider, and he wants to make sure his bids to buy and offers to sell are wide enough to make up for the cost of trading against people who know whether the price is going to go up or down. So that's one component of liquidity cost.
And how do people know whether the price is going to go up and down?
Oh, who knows? The idea is some traders are just more skilled at interpreting information. And we find that might be the case. I'll talk a little bit later, but we break out the analysis, including USDA report days. And that's a time when new information becomes publicly available. And this cost of adverse selection tends to go up right after that. And that suggests that some traders are maybe better able to process and understand that information and particularly make inferences about what direction the price is going to go and respond to that new information. So it's more a story of some people are faster at discerning what's going on in the market, and that gives them an edge.
So that's one. So there's adverse selection. You said there are two more, right?
Yeah. So the second is called inventory cost. And if you think about the business model of the liquidity provider, what they really want to do is buy and sell quickly. They never want to build a position to the long side or the short side. So they love it if the orders come in, buy, sell, buy, sell, buy, sell. That keeps them completely neutral on a position. If it happens to be the case where the market orders come in, buy, 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 then that liquidity provider is going to build a position to one side or the other. And that leaves them exposed to price risk because suddenly they're not neutral. They're either long or short in the market, and they don't want to be that way because their business model is providing liquidity, not on understanding price direction. If the trading flows happen to be providing a lot of buy, 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 then the liquidity providers would want to widen their spread to account for the risk of holding the inventory. And maybe even if they start to hold a little bit of a long position and they'd like to induce some sales, maybe they'll lower that offer to sell to entice people to come into the market with orders to buy, which will be paired with their offers to sell. Then they can reduce the size of their position.
Okay. And so the third one?
The third one is kind of a leftover component. So those two cost components that I talked about are percentages of the spread. They're not absolute numbers. And so we've got a certain share of it going to adverse selection, another share of it going to inventory cost, and then the model just lumps everything else into one minus those two. And historically, that's been called order processing cost. So we understand that it costs something to engage in trading, whether it's exchange fees, telecommunications, infrastructure, a variety of things, but it just costs some money to do the business, and that last component is that.
So tell us a little bit about why we're interested in this. So there's these three components. There's this bid-ask spread that you're looking at. Why would someone be interested in understanding how these three components are associated with this bid-ask spread?
Sure. So I think you have to look at it from the perspective of one, like the typical market participant who's trading either to speculate or to hedge or whatever. And from their perspective, they really want liquidity costs to be low as possible. So just understanding whether liquidity costs are high or low, or when they might be high or low, is important to them. And from the perspective of a liquidity provider, you would kind of want to understand what is driving those two important cost components. So if liquidity costs go up related to adverse selection, then you feel like you have to account for an increased proportion of traders who are informed in the market. And that's something that you have to be aware of when you're providing liquidity.
So one really interesting part about your paper is the fact that you're looking at this unique period, 2008 to 2011. And it's actually a really interesting case study that you guys have that, you know, this is when prices, ag commodity prices, and especially ag commodity prices, just shot through the roof and then plunged down. And there was a lot of debate about why that happened, what happened there. So tell us a little bit about what's special about that period.
Yeah, that, like you mentioned, that period is a great microcosm to study because in 2008, we started to get really ramped up on demand from ethanol. And production that year was pretty much on trend, but the demand was increasing faster than anticipated, I guess.
And that demand for ethanol was due to those two policies that were passed in 2005 and 2007 by the Bush administration that mandated a certain amount of ethanol to be used by U.S. consumers.
Commonly known as the Renewable Fuel Standard. So we started to see price impacts from that policy beginning in 2008. Well, arguably before that, but we had a really big price spike in 2008, and the price of corn futures, nearby corn futures, got up close to $8 a bushel, which was essentially unheard of, and people were really worried about what was going on with the markets. And there was some worry that the price spikes were being exacerbated by excessive speculation, as they say. And so there's been a lot of research since then on the effect of speculation in those markets and whether they had an impact in the price going up as high as it did.
And what has that research found?
So, I mean, truthfully, it's been mixed. You can find papers that find support of both sides, but most of the work that I've read finds that there's not a smoking gun that speculation was any part of that, particularly when you consider the fundamentals that should have been causing the prices to go up and then come down. So it's not as if there's an absence of a fundamental explanation.
So connect your paper then back to this 2008 to 2011 period. Why is it important or interesting to think about those bid-ask spreads and those three components of that bid-ask spread within the context of that ramp up and then prices going down rapidly?
So part of the speculators that people were worried about were these entities called commodity index funds. And they're funds whose strategy is to buy a certain defined bundle of commodities, so a certain percentage of crude oil, a certain percentage of corn, a certain percentage of soybeans. And their strategy would be long only. So they'll come into these markets and just buy, depending on how much money they've had come into their fund. And so there was concern that this was creating extra demand, as they say, and leading to a lot more pressure on the buy side for these.
What do you mean by extra demand? What does that mean?
Well, I'm not sure what that means exactly, but that's the term that was thrown around a lot in the research on this stuff. I mean, if there was excess demand, there had to be excess supply too, because there's a seller for every buyer and a buyer for every seller in these markets. But so their strategy is to be long only in these futures contracts. And as we know, futures contracts are short-lived. They expire on a certain schedule. And so if you're going to be perpetually long, as those futures contracts expire, you need to roll into the next to expire contract. And that has implications for liquidity costs, because if there's, in a certain window of time, a lot of trading just related to rolling these contracts, if it's a long-only strategy, when you're rolling, you'll be selling only because you're trying to exit that long position. And so for a week in the month prior to expiration, then there can be a greater proportion of trades that look like sell, 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 which might be impacting liquidity costs in that the way that I described a little bit earlier. So there's a concept in finance called sunshine trading versus predatory trading. And the concept is, if you are some kind of a fund who announce that knows you need to make a big trade and it's not related to inside information about fundamentals in any way, it's just procedural and you're going to be making a lot of trades, it might be beneficial to just announce to the public, we're making a lot of trades. It's not because we think the price is going to go up or down. It's just because we need to do this for whatever reason we need to do this. And the theory of sunshine trading says that if you do that, that will attract additional liquidity to the market, because people would like to provide liquidity, earn that spread, and then benefit from the fact that there's increased activity that's not related to fundamentals that will make the price change. That's the theory of sunshine trading. Another theory that has been proposed is called predatory trading, and that says, well, if these entities announce that they're going to make a lot of trades, then other traders could jump in on the same side and maybe get the price reaction to overshoot. And then they would benefit when all of those extra trades were done, and then the price kind of goes back to whatever the equilibrium level would be. So that would be a case where, instead of additional liquidity coming to the market, there's additional demanders of liquidity coming to the market, and you might see spreads widen in the case of predatory trading.
So what did you guys find when you looked at, during that period, what's been happening?
Yeah, so what we found, I think anyway, is really interesting. When you actually look at the spread is almost always at its minimum level. So commodity futures markets can only fluctuate a quarter of a cent at a time, which means that the bid-ask spread can only fall to a quarter of a cent. It can't go any lower. So we find that it's the average over any time period you want to average over. It looks like 0.26, 0.27. If it's really big, 0.278, which is much closer to one tick than even two ticks, which would be the next highest level that the bid-ask spread could go to, of course. So when you just ask the question, what happened to liquidity cost in this time, you have to say nothing. And there's been a lot of actually previous research that have asked that question and found very similar results. The interesting thing about our paper is when we break out those components of the bid-ask spread, we find that that small spread is made up of different sizes of those components that I talked about before.
So what's important? Which one of those components is driving the result, and why is that important to know?
Okay, so we got two different answers to that question, depending on whether you're talking about the USDA announcements. Did we talk about USDA announcements?
We didn't, but let's. So you guys, in addition to looking at this really unique time period in futures markets, you also look at this idea of new information entering into those futures markets. And you guys use two sources. One is the USDA reports, and the other is this rollover period. So why don't you tell us what those are and why you think those are important?
So one of the really important ways that information comes into the markets is by reports that are given from the USDA. The USDA is really active in surveying farmers about production prospects and acreage intentions, acreage plantings. And so when the USDA makes reports about these things, the market generally responds to that, sometimes in really significant ways, sometimes very, very quickly, very, very volatilely, as the market digests what it has learned from the new information in those reports. So since previous research has shown that these markets respond pretty quickly, maybe pretty intensely, we thought that would be something that we should take a look at and see if the components, see if one, we find also that the liquidity costs remain pretty low during that time, as previous research has found, and also if we can see any changes in what comprises those liquidity costs as USDA reports come out. So what we found was we get very different answers when we estimate the components of liquidity costs during USDA report releases compared to especially what liquidity costs are comprised of when we're in one of these commodity index fund roll periods. So when a USDA announcement has just been made, we find that the asymmetric information component is higher than a typical trading day and much higher than on an index fund roll day.
What do you mean by an asymmetric component?
Yeah, so I mean that risk to the liquidity provider of trading against an informed trader. And so we interpret that as these reports are released, then there are some traders who are very fast at processing the implications of that report and what it means for fundamentals in the market, particularly what it means to price direction. And so those that number of traders who can interpret that information quickly, they essentially have information others don't have, at least yet. And so there's a risk to the liquidity providers of trading against those guys. And that means they need to widen their spread, knowing that those guys are there and that they're likely to be trading against more informed traders in the wake of a USDA report release than on a typical trading day. So that's in contrast to what we found during the commodity index fund roll period, because we found that during the window when these index funds are rolling from the nearby to the first deferred, inventory costs are elevated relative to a typical trading day, and elevated in particular a lot more than on a USDA report day. And so if you remember how I define the inventory cost, that means that there's a risk to this liquidity provider. The trades are going to look more like sell, 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 as opposed to sell, buy, sell, buy, sell, buy. And that makes sense in the context of index funds rolling, because you have these traders in the market who are just trading on one side, trying to get out of a large position that was long. And we find that the bid-ask spread is composed more significantly during that time period of inventory costs compared to adverse selection. Adverse selection during that period is actually lower than a typical trading day. It also makes sense. There's that day is no more likely to include injections of information about fundamentals than a typical trading day, but you have more trades that are kind of one-sided without reason, without information related to fundamentals, that is.
So, okay, so we have the results. How should our listeners think about it in terms of just what's the impact on them? Are we finding that markets are really efficient? Are we finding that these reports are somehow causing markets to change in a positive or negative direction? How should we think about what you found?
I think you would have to say that our findings point to markets being very efficient. The key measure to that would be whether the spread widened or not, not the components of the spread. And remember that we found that the spread is quite small in all cases that we looked at. Usually, in most any time of the day, and you look at the spread, it's going to be a quarter of a cent, which is as small as it can be. So for a typical market participant, that's really good news. You want the spread to be as small as possible, especially if you are a demander of liquidity and want to trade immediately. So that's good news for market participants. It's good news for the exchange too, I suppose. If you're a liquidity provider, maybe our results are something you already knew because you're setting your spreads based on your own assessment of the risk I described. So maybe we're just estimating or observing what you already know.
So Mindy, this work that you're working on, is it just you or are you working with other co-authors?
Yeah, this work is joint with two co-authors from Illinois. The first is currently a PhD student, but this was essentially his master's thesis. So he's an excellent student, wrote an excellent thesis, and we've been excited to polish this thing up and get it presentable. The other colleague is Phil Garcia. He's done a lot of work on price analysis and commodity markets and futures markets, so he's a really great co-author to have too.
I think we're about out of time, so I want to really thank Mindy for coming out here and doing a seminar later in the day, but spending a little bit of time talking to us. And if you want to find past episodes of our podcast, you can log on to our website. You can also subscribe to our podcast series on iTunes. If you're interested in reading some of the blogs that we've written, we try to update that at least once a week. So always new content on the ageconmt.com website. Check that out. You can always leave us a message, send us an email. We're always looking for new suggestions and new questions to try to explain and try to communicate with you, the listeners, and our stakeholders. So until our next episode, or until you read another blog on our website, have a wonderful day. And as always, may the weather be in your favor.